Welcome, everyone, to the Woken English Podcast. This is your host, Gabriel Aguero. I'm joined by Francisco Aude from Buenos Aires. Fran, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Gabe. Hello, everyone around the globe. How are you guys?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. Facundo Salazar joining us from Miami, Florida. Facu, how's everything, buddy?
Hi, Gabby. How are you guys doing? I'm doing very, very well.
I think we're all doing well. 6 points from six from Boca in the restart of the Copa Libertadores. And that's what we're going to be chatting about today. We're going to do a little recap on Thursday night's game against Deem in Colombia. You guys watched it live. I didn't have the pleasure to do so. I was in class, obviously, again. The same thing. It will be the same case this Tuesday. I will also be in class, so I won't be able to watch it live. But I do watch the rerun as soon as I get back home. Let me start with Francisco on your thoughts on the game. From what I read and what I saw afterwards, when I finally was able to watch the game, it wasn't a pretty game, but Boca were able to seal the deal very, very late from a Toto Salvio goal. What are your thoughts, Fran? What did you think?
Well, first of all, I say the benchmark, I think it wasn't so high because Deem arrived to this match in last place on the group, so it wasn't expected that it should be as hard as it was in the end. Boca was really outplaying Deem throughout most of the match, but it was really hard to open the score. In fact, we did in the last minutes, and I think that Boca didn't win by a larger margin because of a lack of performance. I think that we have very good, very high points, no weak points in general, but for some reason, Deem neutralized us for some time, and it turned out to be a really harder match than it was expected.
Yeah, I agree. Facu, what are your thoughts on the game?
I think that we started kind of very well with the ball. There was a lot of passes, you know. We just couldn't break them because they played very good defensively. They were waiting for us to make a mistake defensively as well, so they were counterattacking all the time. But Boca was patient, you know, passing the ball, going through Campuzano, which had a solid game but not outstanding that, you know, he's getting us used to.
Don't say that in front of Gabriel.
No, but it's good because, you know, we cannot depend on him all the time. You know, I think that Maradona getting injured 36 minutes in kind of hit us a little bit because it was very unexpected. The good thing that we had some chances in the first half and nothing crazy. I think that the fact that Caracas beat Libertad the day before put us in a situation that maybe Boca was a little more defensive, you know, more into waiting, see what was going to happen. Not rushing into winning because we didn't need to win. Like with a tie, we were still in first position. So I think that Boca was very waiting to see what happened. You know, we gave the ball to Medellin in the second half a little bit to see if they wanted to provide or do anything. They didn't do anything. They had zero shots on goal. So that's when Boca took over again and started playing a little bit better. You know, with Ball coming in with for Soldano, I was expecting it to be a better game for Bo. I didn't like what Soldano did. He didn't do anything at all. And that's when the question comes in, and I hope you guys have something to say as well, but I'm starting to don't know what's going to happen with Soldano because, you know, if you look at the stats, he doesn't recover much. He's running all over the pitch, but he's not recovering much. Tevez had a normal game. I think that every player had a normal game and no one was standing, no one. But again, it's an away game in Libertadores and we came out with a win. I mean, the goal was terrible. And we pressured them a little bit, but it came out of a mistake from them. We didn't create the mistake. They just made it because, you know, they lost the last seven games in the Libertadores in their history. So they're not a good team. But we came out with a win after 16 years in Colombia. So I take it, you know. We're first in the group, 10 points. And now we have two home games. So hopefully, you know, the engine is getting a little bit better, if you put it that way. And, you know, Russo's back. He's going to be on the bench tomorrow. So I'm excited about that. But again, he was an outstanding game. But in Libertadores, you had to win. And we won. We got the 3 points. Like it or not, that's what it matters.
Yeah, I mean, I'm impressed what Boca has done so far. If anybody would have told me, you know, two draws from these two games, I probably would have been happy with that. But we got six, considering Libertad played 18 games before we completely played them off the park. And Dima as well has been playing, if I'm not mistaken, Colombia has been playing football for a couple weeks now. So both in better shape and better form, much more well-oiled than Boca were coming into these two games. But Boca still won both of them. Talking about the Dima game in specific, the build-up play I thought was very, very sloppy. Both teams were very sloppy. I think we played down to Dima's level because going into the match, as we said last week, Dima are very, very, very poor. And this is a team that won the Colombian league last season, if I'm not mistaken. That's how they clinched qualification to the Copa Libertadores. But very, very sloppy.
Gabi?
Very bad game to watch overall. Go ahead, Facu.
I feel like the Boca saw that Dim was not going to attack or not do anything throughout the game. So we were just, like you said, we played at the level and we relaxed a lot. Like we were like, all right, like how are you saying in the US? Like we were just chilling, not creating anything because we knew that they were not going to create anything. There was no chances that they created that I was like scared. There was maybe one free kick that was very close to our box. But besides that, it's exactly what you said. Like Boca played to their level, and that's why it came out being a terrible game.
Yeah, I think, you know, overall, if you look at the statistics, we still had a couple of decent chances on goal. We had 16 total shots versus their 5. We had 6 shots on target. They had 0. We had 6 corner kicks, 3 offside. So you could tell, despite that, Boca were trying to play upfield, to try and propose something, but Dima made it very, very difficult. Plenty of fouls left and right, especially from Dima. 21 fouls from them, 12 fouls from Boca. So they proposed a very dirty game to try and neutralize us that way, and they nearly did. I think the goal came off, I think it was one of Dima's defenders just plays the ball back, I'm assuming to the goalkeeper. I don't know what he was trying to do there.
Yeah, it was a serious mistake.
I think it was maybe Murillo who plays the ball back to the goalkeeper. Very, very mistimed pass. Capaldo gets a control of the ball, and Capaldo needs to work on his finishing. This is a very prime example. He gives where he's going to shoot, he gives it away completely to the goalkeeper by shifting his body out to the right. He knows the goalkeeper's knows that Capaldo's going to shoot to his left. In Capaldo's case, to the right of the goal. Goalkeeper does well. The ball gets mixed up in the middle near the penalty box, and Sabio gets a hold of it and slots it home. And the final closing minutes, I mean, that goal itself just paints a great picture of how the game was. Just a terrible goal, a very bad game overall. Individually, though, I think Zambrano played a pretty good game. Izquierdos, again, with plenty of fouls. At least this is what I saw, plenty of fouls. Emmanuel Mas and Jara this time didn't offer anything. Your fullbacks need to get involved in attack, and especially on the left side. I remember tweeting that Boca is very dependent playing on the right side where Salvio plays. Ever since we lost Villa, it seems like we don't even use that flank anymore, and it makes it so much harder when the fullback, in this case Mas, doesn't help Maroni or Obando, you know, going forward. This is why I think it's crucial, which we're going to get into in a little bit, but it's crucial for Frank Fabra to get back into the starting 11, because Frank Fabra, he's not the best defender in the world, but attacking-wise, going upfield, playing with Cardona, whoever on that side, on the left flank, does a great job. And he had a really good game against Dim a couple months ago in La Bombonera, where we won 3-0. Fabra assisted, I believe, one goal to Salvio, maybe another one. I think he even scored in that match too. So getting Frank Fabra fit and back into the starting 11 for me is imperative. We really, really need him. We can't rely so heavily on the right side. Campuzano, not an outstanding game, but played pretty well. Same with Paul Fernandez, Salvio as well. Maroni, unfortunately, got injured at the 37th minute. He had to come out, and Obando replaced him. Obando didn't do much, really.
What do you think about that sub? Obando coming in for Maroni. I was not expecting that at all.
You think Cardona was going to go in?
I thought that Cardona was going to go in.
I thought, I mean, again, I didn't watch the game live, but it makes sense. Russo's not inventing positions for everybody. Oando's the left midfielder, and Oando's going to go in. As we saw in the past against Diem and against Libertad, Cardona is Tevez's replacement. That's
you think so? So you would play only with like one forward?
In this because case, yes, because Salvio is pretty much your other forward.
Correct. Yeah.
You have Cardona, and you have whoever's in front of him. In this case, Soldano or Bo or Juanchope Avila when he's fit, and Salvio. But it seems to me from these two games that Cardona is Tevez's replacement. Talking about Tevez, he created a 2, 3, 4 chances for his teammates. They weren't able to score. Even Tevez had a chance or two to score, and he wasn't able to score either. So I actually liked the game from Tevez. It was pretty good. And the video that I shared, I don't know if you got a chance to watch it, Faku. The video that I shared on Twitter demonstrated that pretty well. I liked the game from Tevez, and I agree with you overall, Soldano. I saw absolutely nothing from him against Nîmes. I feel like, you know, he's going to have to start scoring goals, or he might end up losing his position. At least in Mocha Twitter, the fans are getting very upset with his performances. As we've said before plenty of times, Soldano is sacrificing himself to make it easier for Tevez to move around the pitch and play well. He's distracting defenders. He's dragging defenders with him to open up space for Tevez, which works, but it needs to get to a point where Soldano has to start banging in goals sooner or later. And I don't know if I said this on the podcast or on Twitter, but Soldano, when he was with Union, he was scoring a lot of headers, and I feel like that's something that's missing from our play. We need to start sending in crosses a lot more for Soldano to take advantage of. Maybe, I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
At all.
We're not. I don't think we are.
I don't think they're looking at him as like a number nine. I mean, because they're not crossing the ball at all. No one's crossing the ball. We hadn't had a cross in probably the last two games. So I don't know exactly what they're thinking. I mean, maybe they're doing something that we don't know. We will never know. And it's working because we're winning and we haven't lost in the last 10, 11 games. But you're like, what are we going to do about this? But again, Salvio keeps scoring, so
Salvio's in the form of his life, honestly. Let me pull up the statistics. He's Boca's all-time goal scorer in this Copa Libertadores. I think he has 5 goals, our all-time goal scorer in 2020. Just trying to pull up the numbers for some reason. I can't find it. I thought I had the tweet bookmarked, but he has something like 12 goals in 13 matches in 2020. So Salvio is imperative. And we said this a couple of weeks ago also on the podcast. I think our most important players are Andrada, Salvio, and Campuzano. And I think that's the case so far. Our two best players in these two games against Nîmes and Libertad has been Campuzano, Salvio, and another clean sheet for Andrada. So I think it helps the case.
Yeah, I know that you were criticizing Capaldo a little bit for his finishing. He needs to work on that. However, I don't think that's his main goal. I mean, if you look at the play, he ran 30, 40 yards to get to that ball. He was the only one paying attention. He was the only one that reached there. So let's give him a little bit of credit because he created the goal.
Absolutely.
It wasn't because of him, I mean, think about it. He was supposed to be a defensive mid, and they were attacking from the side. And out of nowhere, he saw the pass and he intercepted that. So I just want to give him a little bit of credit. It's good to have him as a, Campuzano's replacement.
Absolutely. I think in certain games, I mean, I love Gabaldo. I think he reads the game very well and he intercepts. He just predicts plays very well. And as you just said, he predicted that play very well in order to create the goal for Salvio. But I think in certain games, in certain instances, in this Libertadores, we might be able to sacrifice Paul Fernandez and put in Capaldo. So Campuzano and Capaldo, because it's honestly, they both are horses in the middle of the field and they both run so much, especially Capaldo. And they both recover the ball so much that in certain games, let's say in the quarterfinal, semifinal against a Flamengo side or Gremio or Palmeiras or whoever, Russo might be thinking about playing with both of them in the middle of the park rather than Paul Fernandez, who offers you different characteristics going forward.
Yeah, now it comes to the point where you play two players that are playing very, very well, or you play two players that can have a fantastic chemistry. That meaning Paul and Campuzano. I think that they understand each other very, very well. I mean, Paul never shines, but he's always there. He's always helping. So that's the big question. Do you play Capaldo because he's playing better or coming in from the bench and being outstanding? Or you keep Paul that understands Campuzano and maybe gives Jorman, you know, more space to be more comfortable? So it's going to be interesting to see how the next few games go.
No, it definitely is interesting. And, you know, that's why we have Miguel Angel Russo there to make those decisions. Personally, I think it just depends on the game. Again, like the example I just gave with Gremio, Palmeiras, or Flamengo, or really any tough trip outside of Argentina, you have, let's say that you have the first leg at home, you're probably going to be more inclined to play with Campuzano and Fernando in the middle of the park in order to get a good lead ahead of the second leg. And in the second leg in Brazil, you might want to be more defensive, more reserved, and that's when you'll implement a midfielder with Capaldo's characteristics. So I think it just depends on the game. But Boca have 10 points in Group H. Boca are first, again, with 10 points. Caracas in second with 7 points. Libertad in third with 6 points. And Deem in last place with 0 points. And I want to bring up a question, Facu. That draw, the 1-1 draw in Venezuela, what do you make of that draw today, looking at that, at Group H?
Oof. I mean, a lot of things happen in the world since that.
Because you remember when we recorded after that game, we were very critical of the 1-1 draw. We thought Boca should have came back with all 3 points. Do you still think that?
To be honest, I'm not going to change with the Monday's newspaper, let's put it that way.
As they say in Argentina, yeah.
Yeah, I think that a point away in a group stage is always huge. So I know they're playing Caracas and all that, but Caracas is second, and they might make it to the next round if we beat Libertad tomorrow. So I like the point, what I mean to say. I mean, what else do you expect? I mean, we won 3 games and we tied 1. I cannot be complaining about it.
Yeah. I remember when we recorded, at least I said, and I think even Fran would agree with me, but at least I said that, you know, that draw was insufficient. We played well enough to come back with all 3 points. And I still think that, but looking at how the group has panned out, Caracas has had some pretty good games. They have picked up some really surprising results. I think they've surprised all of us. I know I'm not the only one who predicted Caracas to possibly finish last. This goes to show also that I only, for the most part, watch Boca. I don't really watch Colombian or Paraguayan or Venezuelan football. But I predicted I predicted Boca first. Second or third would be a dispute between Deem and Libertad. And then Caracas, I predicted fourth and last. But they have had a pretty good run so far. If things continue the way they've been, Caracas will probably seal, you know, that second place and then qualify into the next round of Copa Libertadores. Worst case.
One of the things we were expecting, Gabby, was Independiente Deem to do this bad. I mean, if you think about it, they beat Atletico Tucumán to qualify to the group. And we all watched those games, and Deem looked pretty solid. I mean, I would not expect them to have 4 losses right now. You know, pandemic happened, and we could be in their position if, you know, it was the other way around. I mean, we didn't know how Boca was going to come back from all this disaster. So, too bad for them, too good for us. To be honest, let's take it and move forward.
Yeah, there was, I mean, when football restarted, when the Copa Libertadores restarted, there was a lot of uncertainty with Argentine clubs, you know, with this huge disadvantage of, you know, how will they return 6 months without playing? And I'm shocked and I'm surprised, you know, for all teams, because I think we've done as a whole, Argentine football has done pretty well. Boca with 2 wins, River with a win and a draw. I believe Racing with 1 loss and 1 win, and Defensa Justicia, I think, won their last game, if I'm not mistaken, against Olimpia 2-1. So, and Olimpia, you know, from Paraguayan football, another team, another country who has been playing football for quite a few months. So I'm really surprised, but it goes to show the dominance that we have in South American football. You know, how we can come back after 6 months. And I remember I tweeted this also. Davis, I'm surprised by his fitness. He played almost 90 minutes in both Paraguay and Colombia, and he looked very well. You know, he looked very well after those 6 months. So I think as a whole, Argentine football has surprised many. And I think that's a huge statement. That's a huge statement, definitely for Brazilian football, which really never stopped throughout this pandemic because of, you know, the politics and beliefs that they have over there. You know, without getting too deep into that, they never really paused their football, if I'm not mistaken. If they did, it was for a couple of weeks, but they have, you know, their state leagues going on. I follow a couple of Brazilian football accounts. They have their state football going on, their domestic competitions going on, and the Copa Libertadores. So they have a lot of football. They're well oiled. So yeah. Any final thoughts before we go ahead and, you know, preview tomorrow's match?
Nope.
Okay.
The only thing that sucks is seeing the Bombonera empty. That's gonna hurt. To be honest, football without fans, terrible. I've been watching the Premier League and all that, and it's no fun. So watching the Bombonera tomorrow is gonna hurt a lot. I fantasize every day when it's gonna be the next time, seeing all the people in there. And as much as it hurts, I don't think it's gonna happen for at least 18 more months.
It's gonna be a while. It's definitely gonna be a while. I know as a neutral, when I'm watching any other league in the world, I like the crowd noise that they put into the streams. You know, I really do appreciate that. It makes for an overall better experience. But as a Boca fan, tomorrow, which again, I won't be able to watch live, I'll have to wait till after class when I get home and I'll be able to watch the game. It's definitely going to hurt. I mean, we're going to see our beautiful stadium. For those of us who, I'm assuming if you're listening to us, you follow the Boca in English Twitter account. You know, I've been posting pictures of La Bombonera throughout these past couple of days, and the work that they've done on the stadium, the section L, the lower tier with the new seating to match the third tier, the same shades of blue, and the middle section getting repainted yellow is absolutely beautiful. And it would be nice to, you know, see that and start seeing aerial views of that and fans packing in the stadium. But unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see that. I agree with you. It definitely is going to hurt, but unfortunately that's just the way it's going to have to be. My uncle is actually a physician, and he told me that they don't expect the virus to be out until summer here in the Northern Hemisphere of 2021. So May, June, July. And you also have to give, after the vaccine is released, you have to give it a couple months for people to receive the vaccine. You know, then you'll know whether the vaccine works. Hopefully, you know, by the time it's released, we know that it works properly. But then you'll get a really good grasp as to if the vaccine is working, you know, in the large population. And by then, after that, you might start seeing fans returning to the stadium, which is weird to say because we're starting to see some fans return to stadium now. You know, there's some matches in France where they're playing with 30 or 40% capacity. I was watching, you know, before Woka played, before I headed to class on Thursday, I was watching the Super Cup, the European Super Cup final between Bayern and Sevilla, and there was some fans over there as well, I believe 30 or 40% capacity. So it's weird, you know, some countries are already letting some fans in, but the majority, as far as Argentina is concerned, with still no domestic football in sight, I don't think we're going to be seeing fans in La Bombonera for a very, very long time. I would say the later stages of 2021, unfortunately. Without further ado, though, I think we should start previewing the match against Libertad. I'm going to give the projected 11, Facu, and you can give me your thoughts, any modifications that you would do, or if you like any of the expected changes for tomorrow. So in goal, we're obviously going to have Andrada. In defense, we have Jara, Izquierdos, Zambrano, and it looks like Fabra will replace Emmanuel Mas. From what I've heard this morning, Fabra, they want to give Fabra some playing time, and I think we really do need him on that left flank, like I was saying a few minutes ago. In midfield, we're going to have Salvio Campuzano, Paul Fernandez, and Obando is going to be replacing Maroni. Maroni is going to be out for 20 to 30 days with a grade 2 muscle injury to his hamstring, so he'll be out for a few weeks. And up top, the same duo of Davis and Soldano. Facu, any thoughts on that, any changes that you would make?
I'm happy that Mas is out and Farah's coming in. Hopefully Frank is not overweight, you know. I mean, based on the pictures, he looked a little bit overweight, but whatever. It's a picture. You never know. Maybe he's killing it in practice. So I'm happy that Mas is out, because I feel like Hara is more like a stoppage wing, and he doesn't go out much. So Mas does the same. So we need somebody to up. We need another, you know, attacker, if you want to put it that way. So I'm happy that Frank is going to be playing. Mm-hmm. Everything else looks solid. I'm eager to see how Bo can help Tevez in attack. But the thing is, it's okay to keep the same 11. I mean, it's working, so why are you going to touch it? Again, I'm not very sure why Obando is starting there. I mean, I know why, but it's just, I would like to see, what's his name, Cardona. Mm-hmm. And my big question, to be honest, I don't know if you have it, where is Zárate? Is he still injured?
He's not. There's been a lot of debate about Zárate and why he's not playing. I think the debate is too much and unnecessary, especially in the Argentine media, who likes to create something out of nothing. Zárate, if I remember correctly, was one of the last few to have coronavirus. So in consequence, he missed those previous couple of, I would say, days or even weeks of practice prior to the game in Paraguay. So I think he's still getting up to speed. They want to get him up to speed before putting him or giving him any playing time. Again, if I could be mistaken, but if my memory serves correctly, Saturday was one of the last few to have coronavirus. That's why he hasn't played yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, besides, he was. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I would like to see him, to be honest. I like Mauro, even though he never passes and it's a little bit selfish. I think he's still a good, good player. I mean, tomorrow, think about it. Libertad's coming with a team that is hurt.
This is going to be a different Libertad. They lost their coach. Ramon Diaz is no longer Libertad coach.
Yeah, no coach. They lost
the last They have an interim games. Coach, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Boca should win. I mean, I expect them to win at least 2-0, to be honest. Claim the first spot and forget about it and maybe, you know, relax or make some switches against Caracas. But that's going to be in a month. So, yeah.
That's right. We're not going to play for a while after this, right?
Yeah, I think it's like almost 21 days that we have to wait after tomorrow, which is
October
terrible.
22nd. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But
nearly a month.
But, I mean, Boca should win tomorrow. I expect them to win. I mean, we're playing at home. And I know there's no fans, but you are in Argentina. You're not traveling. You're all healthy. You got no excuse to go out tomorrow, win, and claim that first position and, you know, forget about it and start focusing on maybe the next round or maybe the first game for the Argentina League.
Yeah.
Yeah.
French, what are your thoughts on that 11?
Well, I think we have been very, very, I think we crossed a line with Mas, because in the last hours, Emmanuel Mas is, for some reason, he's one of the most criticized players. Some people doubt if he has the level to play in Boca, which is a valid point of view, despite who agrees and who doesn't. But lots of fans in this, I would like to say it in a fancy way, but I can't, in this big sack of shit that is social media in general, masses, they have crossed a line with him, harassing him and a lot of nasty things which should not exist. And I think that is we have crossed a line with him, so now he's out of the team and possibly Fabra will be in his place, so that should be a boost, because actually I would prefer Fabra. However, I am disgusted with the kind of things I've read on social media that he received. That's my problem. However, if Obando goes in for Maroni, then it's good. I really liked Obando the times I saw him playing. He has personality. He needs more minutes. That's it. I would be really, really happy. If Boca wins tomorrow, the result between Caracas and Libertad could grant us the first place on the group in this week. So that could be really good. Yeah, I think that would be good, so we could possibly field some new players. I think if Boca has the match under control in the last 20 minutes, yeah, tomorrow, possibly Russo or Somoza will give minutes to the new players. I would see some of the young lads having some minutes. That are my thoughts. I'm really looking forward to the match. Hopefully with some good news and good moments.
Yeah, I think, you know, tomorrow Boca shouldn't, and you know, asterisks, because this is football and really anything could happen. Boca shouldn't have any issues overcoming this Libertad side that, you know, we already beat in Paraguay. They have lost their coach after losing in Venezuela to Caracas. So I think Boca shouldn't have any issues winning. If we win, we're into the next round. I believe even with a draw, we're into the next round. That's depending on the match between, you know, our other rivals. I think they play on, I'm just trying to take a look over here, on Wednesday. Caracas face Deme at 6:15 p.m.
Caracas Libertad on Wednesday.
Yes, they play on Wednesday. So even with a draw, yeah, and then depending on the... Go ahead, Fran.
Yeah, any match, to leave it in a simple way, if Boca wins and Caracas doesn't win, we will be confirmed in first place in this group. That's it. We need to win, and we need Caracas not to win on Wednesday. That's all.
And if we tie,
even with a draw, even with a draw and Caracas doesn't win, we seal first place. If we draw and they win, then the first place and second place is still up for grabs. But just diving back into the team for a second, I honestly, because there's only 5 days between Thursday and Tuesday's match, I expected a lot more of a rotation. I expected to see, I was hoping to see Zárate. I was hoping to see Cardona from the start. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to see either of them. Hopefully, I personally think this is a little bit of a risky move. I don't want anybody to get injured for, you know, when really it's unnecessary. We're in pole position to grab first place. I think one or two, maybe even three more changes would have been nicer. But I understand Miguel's thinking here. Team that wins, you know, you don't touch except for maybe one or two positions that are necessary. Fabra obviously is the starter over Mas. I think he's going to start from here on out, hopefully. Jara, I'm not his biggest fan either. I would like to see Bufarini there. But overall, you know, it's going to be the same team that we've seen the past two matches that really shouldn't have any issues overcoming Libertad. And then, you know, we seal first place. I think that's it, though, in terms of the preview. There are two other things that I'd like to mention. This is for those who play, you know, Pro Evolution Soccer and FIFA 21. That's due to come out next month. There's a lot of confusion whether Boca will be in the game or not. For PES first, since that's the more it's easier to explain that one. There's only going to be a season update, I believe. I don't know if either of you guys play PES or FIFA. I'm more of the FIFA guy. There is
no Pro Evolution Soccer 2021, but just a big update for Pro Evolution Soccer 2020. I think that's it.
Yeah, they're updating the kits and the squad, because I'm assuming they're revamping the entire game for PES 2022. That's really what they're working on. So in this season update, Boca's still going to be in Pro Evolution, you know, fully licensed and whatnot. As far as FIFA goes, Boca will still be part of the Copa Libertadores mode, as in FIFA 20. So you're only going to be able to use Boca Juniors in Copa Libertadores mode with the official kits and club emblems and players. Outside of the Copa Libertadores mode, you will not be able to use Boca. It's only going to be Buenos Aires with the generic kits and all that nobody likes. But
that's my blue shit.
As of May 2021, there will be an update for FIFA, and this is when Boca's contract with Konami, or exclusive rights with Konami, expires. When they expire, Boca's new contract with FIFA will go into effect. There will be an update, and you'll be able to use Boca and La Bombonera. La Bombonera has already been scanned for the game, from what I've been reading. So as of May 2021, you'll be able to use Boca, La Bombonera, authentic kits, and all that outside of the Copa Libertadores mode. So really throughout the entire game.
I have a question for you guys.
Go ahead, save money. Just save money for 2021.
Yeah, that too. So last year, or 2 years ago, I think, that when Boca went from FIFA to Konami, They did it because, you know, apparently Konami was paying Boca more money. That was under Angelisi's presidentially thing. So a question for you is, do we know if we're getting more money from FIFA, or we're just moving to FIFA to show in a game that is being sold more? What do you guys want? Boca to get more money out of Konami, or Boca go to FIFA because it's just popular? You know what I'm trying to say?
Can I answer, Gabe?
Yeah, of course, John. Go ahead.
The club's vice president, Mario Pergolini, who has a long life in media and in these kind of things, he's a big fan of gaming. He has been a legendary radio host for decades in Argentina. That's his background, very involved in music and business and that stuff. I think he pretty knows how to handle this. The explanation he has publicly given, I think that Gabriel posted this in our Twitter, is that they chose FIFA because of the popularity, the huge popularity, and there are some examples that work perfectly around the world. In England, in very small teams in England, that did a good sponsorship alliances, and that proved to be crucial in FIFA. So they want to bet for FIFA. They're gamblers to boost the popularity again in FIFA. That's the explanation they have given.
So we're getting less money from FIFA, but we're betting to see if that brings us more money somewhere else.
Yeah,
that's what basically you guys saying.
I think that's what they have in mind.
The way I think of it personally, and I'm going to, you know, give some figures off of the top of my head, I think being exclusive to PES is really beyond stupid, in my opinion, and I'll explain why. And this is my explanation, is just to do, you know, with terms of money and marketing. You have 10 million people that buy FIFA annually, and you have 2 million people that buy Pro Evolution Soccer annually. With being exclusive to PES, those 2 million people will be seeing Boca's kit, you know, emblem, badge, all that annually. Those 10 million people that buy FIFA miss out. So you have 10 million people that potentially could buy your jersey, could buy your kit, could buy any merchandise with a club that are missing out. And I think as a marketing strategy, short term, just because Pro Evolution is giving you more money, is stupid. I think being exclusive, if you're going to be exclusive to one, let it be to the best selling game, you know, and in this case, it just happens to be FIFA. I think in the long run, you're losing out on a lot of people buying your club's merchandise. I like the move from Boca of not being exclusive to either. Yeah, short term, you might get less money from EA Sports and Konami. But in the long term, you have 10 million people from FIFA that are going to see the club's badge kit along with a couple of million from PES. So everybody gets to see your badge and kit, and everybody says, oh, I want to buy Boca's first kit. I want to buy Boca's third jersey, which is due to release in a couple of weeks, which we've seen some filtered images. Personally, that's the way I view it. I don't know if it's the best strategy. I think it is. But again, I'm saying this from my desk inside of my bedroom, not
yeah, running a football. Yeah, yeah, with a PS4 joystick in your hand.
Exactly.
You know what? You know what, Gabby? Your point of view is perfect. It's perfect, and it's very simple to understand. However, River Plate did the same move, exactly the same move, 1 year after Boca did.
They did, yeah.
So I'm not sure if it was so inconvenient. I don't know if that's the word, but. I'm sure that there must have been some point in doing what Boca did.
Short term, you're going to get a lot of money from Konami for being exclusive. But long term, you're missing out on a whole bunch of millions of people that play FIFA that aren't seeing your club's kit. You know, and I'm referring to not the day-to-day fan, not me and you and Faku who follow Boca day-to-day and will buy the jersey no matter what. I'm talking about, you know, the casual fan in Sweden or Norway or whatever, you know, who potentially would have bought Boca's kit, but he's not because he only plays FIFA and he doesn't see the team there. That's personally the way I view. I don't know if that amount of money amounts to, you know, what you get from Konami or is less. I don't know that. But yeah, that's just my thinking. I think Boca shouldn't be exclusive. We're too big of a club to be exclusive. I think the badge, the kit, the emblem, the stadium, La Bombonera should be in both games for everybody to enjoy. Personally, that's just the way I see it. Any closing thoughts, though, guys, before we go ahead and close out this episode?
I wouldn't gamble to have a draw tomorrow Peru and draw with Caracas. The match against Caracas is nearly 3 or 4 weeks away. We don't know how this pandemic can evolve, so I would try to make sure first place this week if we could.
Faku, any closing thoughts?
They better win tomorrow. That's what I have to say. I mean, we got to take the first 3 points at home and then focus, you know, on getting fitter and getting faster, getting better. So if the Argentina League starts in, let's say, in 2-3 weeks, we're ready for that. And we already sealed the first position in the group. So they need to come out hungry tomorrow. They need to win. And, you know, I'm ready to scream some goals tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with Faku. I think grabbing all 3 points tomorrow will be imperative. We won't see Boca again in the Copa Libertadores till October 22nd. That doesn't mean we won't see Boca again because Argentina has loosened up the restrictions with, you know, domestic football. There's a lot of teams that played friendlies over the weekend, and we'll probably see a couple of friendlies from Boca in order to stay in tip-top shape ahead of the very last game of the group against Caracas, I believe. So, and maybe even domestic football might already be underway. They're saying October 16 is the magical number, whether that's the case or not. You know, we'll see. Faku, Francisco, thank you guys so much for joining me. Tour listeners, thank you so much. And until next time.